Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
This is Life and Art from FT Weekend. I'm Lila Raptopoulos.
Do you know something? I'm in love with you.
You are hearing the voice of Samara Joy via her TikTok channel. Samara is 24 years old. She's a three-time Grammy Award winner, most recently for the single Tight.
I don't know where my man is. Where can he be? What is he doing?
This week, she is kicking off a four-month tour in Canada, Europe, and the west coast of the U.S. And all that is quite a place to be just 2 years out of college. I recently interviewed Samara for a profile of her for our luxury magazine, HTSI. And we started with the fact that Samara is only the second jazz artist in history to win the coveted Grammy for Best New Artist. Is that right? The second or the third?
Yeah, the second. Yes. The first was Esperanza Spalding against Justin Bieber and Drake.
Yeah. So. Nice. That's okay.
Nice.
So you're from New York, from the Bronx, born and raised. You come from a very musical family. Can you tell me about your journey of finding jazz as a singer?
Yes. I grew up already kind of listening to genres of music that involved acoustic instruments, like artists like pianist George Duke and like Layla Hathaway and Jill Scott. But for the most part, I hadn't really listened to jazz growing up. And I only encountered it when I was in high school. And a teacher of mine, actually, she taught only band students and I was in the vocal class. Mm-hmm. And she was like, okay, I'm going to grab a couple vocal students to sing some songs with the band. And I sang two jazz songs. And those were the only two that I knew. And I don't I don't remember being intrigued enough to go further, honestly. I was like, okay, I'm going to do these songs. Nice. Right. But I hadn't really listened with enough intent to decide whether or not I wanted it to be a career. I wasn't thinking about that until I got to college. I went to SUNY Purchase and I heard Sarah Vaughan and Abby Lincoln and Betty Carter. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I love how unique everybody's voice is, you know, because it's like not everybody has everything, but you can grab all this wonderful inspiration from each singer. And I found that I could just keep adding to myself, you know, different interpretation skills and range, and I have ideas. My ears are opening up even more compared to when I was younger.
Can you say a little bit more about what you mean by that? Sort of as you like kind of folding in those elements.
So I find that before I got to Purchase, I was still singing like myself, but I had never trained my voice. Mm-hmm. I had listened to music and listened to singers and wanted to copy them and imitate them. But my voice was not developed. Mm-hmm. And I find that I didn't have a lot of control over it and or control over the ideas that I wanted to express. Right. I feel like I got that awareness when I got to college.
Right. And we should say that you're so... I said that you come from a very musical family, but by that I mean your paternal grandparents.
My paternal grandparents were the founders of a gospel group in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. And your father is a vocalist and a bass player. I heard you say that you felt that jazz was like a real home for your voice.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean when you say that?
I mean, with jazz, I felt like I didn't necessarily have to fit into a box. It definitely taught me, I guess, boundaries and taste and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When to fully let it out, when to draw it back in, as far as dynamics and you know, power when it comes to my voice. But I felt like I could sing the way that I was singing, you know, and not have to maybe discard my influences in order to do it.
Yeah, amazing. I saw you perform here last night And we were all like packed in tight.
I know. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. It was all part of the vibe. Mm-hmm. It was good. You were wearing a bright pink dress. You were like very comfortable on stage, telling stories between songs. It felt like we were all kind of on this journey with you, learning about you through each song.
I'm glad.
It felt very intimate. And at one point in the show, towards the end, you were singing Lush Life.
I used to visit all the very gay places.
Which you put out recently as a single, also Grammy nominated.
Where one relaxes on the axis of the wheel of life to get the feel of life.
Can you tell me quickly about that song?
Yes. So it was written by wonderful pianist and Duke Ellington's right hand, Billy Strayhorn, when he was 19 years old. And I find that it's such a rough song, you know, especially for somebody who wrote it at 19, talking about the fact that the love that you thought you had is not there anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, life is lonely again. And only last year, everything seems so short. You know, things are slowly breaking down and falling apart right before your very eyes. And by the end of the song, you realize that that's probably the only true love you'll ever have, you know?
Yeah, woof.
Crazy.
When you went to sing that song, your whole body changed. Like, it felt like your posture changed, the way you moved your face changed. It really felt like you were being yourself, but also embodying somebody. Mm-hmm. To create like the sound and the feeling that you wanted. I found that very moving. Mm-hmm. And I want to know what were you doing there? Mm-hmm. Can you kind of walk me through that performance?
I'm glad that it, I don't realize, you know, mm-hmm. when things change like that, but I know I don't want to smile through it because it's not a happy song.
Yeah.
And I think the story itself and the way that we arranged it, it requires, all of you, you know, you mm-hmm. can't, back away from it because maybe I don't want to feel like that or even try to imagine what somebody in that position would feel like, but it requires you to be open and to be fully immersed in mm-hmm. the story that you're trying to tell. I feel like that song in particular.
So are you, when that song is next, mm-hmm. do you sort of feel the feeling that you know is, mm-hmm. yeah,
I try to imagine. I try to imagine what it would be like to be in that position because I don't know if I've ever felt that kind of heart-wrenching, yeah. you know, deep longing of like wanting to give up on love and wanting to live a life of being alone.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to imagine and maybe method act a little bit and try to imagine what it would be like to feel that way.
Yeah.
And hopefully that informs my interpretation of it when I sing it.
Yeah.
I'm Michaela Tindera, host of Behind the Money, a podcast from the Financial Times. Every week, we take you inside the biggest business and investing stories of the moment, from Apple's reliance on China.
The more you peel back the onion, the more you realize that it's China all the way down.
To turmoil in the banking world.
If it goes bankrupt, we'll have chaos in financial markets. It would have been absolute carnage.
Follow Behind the Money wherever you listen to podcasts.
I wanted to go back to one thing about your songwriting process
mm-hmm.
That you seem to like writing over melodies. Sort of writing original lyrics over famous compositions. And we were talking a lot about your lyrics over Charles Mingus's
Reincarnation,
yeah, of a Lovebird. You said on stage that it took you a year.
Yes.
Yeah. So can you tell me a little bit about that creative process for you? Maybe we can take Reincarnation of a Lovebird.
Yes.
Yeah.
For me, when I'm writing lyrics, I try to imagine first the story that I want to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Usually things flow pretty naturally after that. I find that I like to listen to the melody over and over and over and over and over again. So even when I'm not listening to it, a word will pop up into my head or a sentence that matches with the melody line that I'm trying to get. Mm-hmm. But I find that a lot of times it's just me rewinding back and like trying to write out the first idea that comes to mind and then kind of fine tuning it after my teacher called it like word vomit or something like that. When you just like write and just keep going and just let it all out until something materializes. And mm-hmm. so I like pen and paper. So I just do that. Cross out. Write it again.
Yeah. Can we listen to a little bit of it?
Sure.
And you can tell.
Oh, we recorded it.
Let me find it. It's at the top. Oh, no. I started a little bit late. Let me play what I have. I was sitting across from a father and daughter last night at the Blue Note, and he said that he played with your dad in New York, but that he remembered that you would come in occasionally with your dad and you would sing backup vocals, things like that. And he said that he remembered that you had a very singular voice, that he rarely heard voices like yours.
Wow.
He said that for us old timers, she makes us feel that the future is bright.
Oh, wow. That's very sweet.
I wonder how it feels to hear that sort of thing from an older generations of
people.
Yeah.
It makes me feel glad. It makes me feel grateful that they feel that way. The music industry is one that, you know, it's can be tedious to be a part of.
Yeah.
But I'm glad to be giving any semblance of hope, you know, to anybody, you know, who loves music and who wants to see it continue in this form.
Yeah. Relatedly, I've been thinking about like the role that you play. Like jazz used to be a thing that everybody listened to, as I understand it. I mean, I don't know about that, but it feels like the jazz singers that influenced you were mainstream.
Mm-hmm. And had audiences within the
They had big audiences. Yeah, they had sort of like everybody had their albums. I want to ask you about bringing jazz back to a mainstream audience. Mm. You're one of the few that's broken through, especially for young people. What does that feel like? Is there like a responsibility that comes with that? Do you even agree with that? I guess, how do you find your way, you know, as a jazz performer now? Where do you sit?
I can't deny that there has been some breakthrough. And, you know, I've been labeled as a Gen Z TikTok star, from TikTok to Grammys and stuff. I would say that I try not to feel a responsibility to that, because my responsibility first and foremost is making sure that I'm making music that I like and that I love. And that I'm proud to share with people, because I love it so much. And so if the focus then becomes I have to do something to stay relevant and stay important to young audiences, it can be draining, I think.
Right. Yeah.
Because you have to compromise what you do in order to keep people's attention. And everybody's different. Everybody has different tastes and what they like and what they don't like. And so you keep chasing after that, and before you know it, you hate what you're doing.
Right.
And so I think the focus and the goal for me is to make sure that what I do, I love it.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of it.
Totally. It reminds me of something you said last night, which is that you've learned a lot over the past few years about how to speak up for yourself, realize what you want, and have good people around you that can help fulfill your vision. Mm-hmm. What types of decisions are those? Like, how do you, you know?
I mean, it can come down to the kind of set list that I have. the schedule, how many gigs I do or don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Photo shoots. Even though I don't do those very often.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, like, 24, I mean, on stage, he said something like, really getting up there. And everybody laughed. Like, it's like, everyone's like, oh my gosh, she's 24. But like, you're also 24. I don't know. Do you like, how do you sit with that?
Well, I was just 21. So this feels, it honestly, at first it felt daunting, but I'm like, girl, that is so 2002 to be scared of your 30s. Like, come on. So yeah, I have to, and but there is also pressure. You're young. You have to do this while you're young.
Mm-hmm.
You're tour as much as you want. Do all of the things. Do it. And so I want to cherish every moment of this, you know, because it may or may not always be like this.
Yeah.
But I'm like, oh my gosh, which one do I choose? Do I choose to take it all in and just work? Or do I actually live life with a little bit of balance, you know, and practice that? You know, so I can actually do it for a long time if this is really what I love. Do I love the attention for a second, or do I love what I'm doing, you know, regardless?
Yeah. I think a lot of us can relate to the feeling that you need some greater purpose other than fame or being seen or being heard or, you know, to really feel like excited to wake up and do it every day. Mm-hmm. Is there like a filter that you put things through?
To be excited about it.
Yeah. To decide, like, is this a thing that I want to do versus a thing that I don't.
Is it going to help me grow?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the question that I ask when I decide certain things or decide whether or not to do something or whether or not to. Mm-hmm. Is it going to help me grow? Do I like it? Mm-hmm. You know, do I enjoy doing this? And is it going to help me grow?
If you were to give advice to people who are just getting into jazz, who like have maybe listened to Miles Davis or listened to Ella Fitzgerald and are kind of coming to it again through you, what should they do? How should they explore it?
I mean, you're probably going to start with me. So whatever you find that you really like about me, whether it's the repertoire, the songs that I sing, or the instrumentation, you like the way the piano sounds, find some pianists that you like. Mm-hmm. You know, there's Errol Garner, there's Wynton Kelly, Duke Ellington. You like bigger, you know, ensembles. You like stuff that maybe is like almost symphonic. You can listen to Nat King Cole.
Yeah.
You know, get into whatever you like and don't feel pressured to know everything, you know, or do research on it.
Yeah.
You know, just find something that you like, integrate it into your daily listening with everything else, you know, and you might just enjoy it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Give it a chance.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This was such a pleasure.
Likewise. Thank you.
That's the show. Thank you for listening to Life and Art from FT Weekend. I've linked to my profile of Samara in the show notes. That link will get you past the paywall on FT.com. And I've also linked to places you can find Samara's work. Also in the show notes are discounts for a subscription to the Financial Times and ways to stay in touch with me on email and Instagram. I love hearing from you. I'm Lila Raptopoulos, and here's my talented team. Katya Kumkova is our senior producer. Lulu Smith is our producer. Our sound engineers are Breen Turner and Sam Javinko, with original music by Metahor Music. Topher Forges is our executive producer, and our global head of audio is Cheryl Brumley. Have a wonderful week, and we'll find each other again on Friday.